Welcome to the final two capstone presentations of the spring semester 2018. If your memory is good, you'll recognize that these capstones were to have happened some weeks ago, but weather intervened, and so both Josh and Charlie will be presenting today. I couldn't help but look at the title, Clergy Stress, and I was thinking, I guess that applies to me because I'm in an interim pastoral role. But I was thinking professor stress and student stress and whatever adjective you want to put before stress. So we will proceed. Cam, are you introducing Josh? Come and introduce Josh. We'll hear his presentation. We'll move right into the question Q&A time. I'll bring an end to that. We'll take a 10-minute break and then come back for Charlie's presentation.
Good morning. It's my absolute pleasure to introduce to you our first capstone speaker today, the one and only Josh Dalton. Josh is an MDiv student here at the seminary. He holds a BS in health promotion, an MS in exercise science, and is a master certified health education specialist. Josh also holds the distinction, as far as I know, of being the strongest dude to ever walk these seminary halls. He deadlifts 600 pounds and has bench pressed over 400 pounds, and he recently won a YMCA powerlifting competition. He's also pastor of Monroe United Methodist Church, and he's also my friend. I met Josh a year and a half ago in preaching class. It was my first semester here, and I didn't know anybody yet, and Josh was one of the first people to reach out to me and befriend me. For someone like myself with high anxiety, it's crucial to have friends who can ground you, friends who don't stress out over every little thing, friends who you feel at ease around, friends you can turn to when you're struggling and who will gladly shoulder your load, up to 600 pounds, that is. Well, Josh is that sort of friend for me. And anyone who knows Josh and has spent enough time with him will likely tell you the same thing. The guy just always seems calm and relaxed. There's none of that spring-loaded tenseness that often seems to come with being a full-time grad student and a pastor. But weightlifting jokes aside, Josh is a gentle man with a pastor's heart. I know that God has big dreams for Josh, and I can't wait to see what the future has in store for him. So without any further ado, I present to you Josh Dalton.
Imagine you're waiting in the hallway of your church before a packed Easter service, mentally going through your dynamite message. You know you're ready. Epinephrine shoots into your system. Norepinephrine follows in small amounts. Your heart rate increases. Your hands get warm. Your eyes widen. Cortisol inches up. This is challenge stress. You're ready to preach. But consider a scenario where you're so worried about a pastoral situation that you can't sleep the night before. The lack of sleep leaves your amygdala on high alert. Moments before you confront the situation, you're mentally going through all your training and education for this, but you can't think. Norepinephrine has beaten out epinephrine, causing more constriction in the blood vessels. Your heart rate increases more, but less blood is being pumped to the brain and the body. Cortisol gushes. Your hands go cold. Your mind goes blank. This is threat stress. Your pastoral response falls flat. This worsens if multiple frequent issues become chronic. You are now experiencing chronic stress. You feel panicked and not in control. Things are coming at you from all angles. You can't keep up. You're now in the danger zone, and stress has won. What we see often is only a fractional part of what really is. Unfortunately, with stress, we are only able to see what's on the surface. We call this iceberg stress. Like an iceberg, the physiological symptoms of stress are hidden below the surface. So, what do we see on the surface? What you're able to see are some of the symptoms of stress that easily manifest themselves physically, including stress headaches, low energy, upset stomach, rapid heart rate, dry mouth, irritability, and loss of sexual desire. What you don't often see are those things that are happening within us, including depression, low self-esteem, avoidance of others, constant worrying, pessimism, memory loss, and inability to focus. But let's go even further and look beneath the surface at what is actually happening to us physiologically when we are stressed. Let's dive deeper. So we have all this talk of stress, and we use this term to describe a frequent condition in our lives, but what exactly is stress? I quote Dr. Hans Selye, who decades ago wrote the definitive text on stress with a book entitled The Stress of Life. His work is still considered the guideline for how we view stress. He said, and this is a tough one, stress is the state manifested by a specific syndrome which consists of all the non-specifically induced changes within a biologic system. In other words, this means that stress has specific characteristics and composition, but no one particular cause, as different things will induce stress in different people. The human body is exposed to a variety of stressors on a daily basis. These include pain, heat, cold, emotional disturbances, infections, and muscular activity. All of these things can induce stress, making causation nonspecific, while the form it takes is always specific. Dr. Selye termed the body's reaction to stress as the General Adaptation Syndrome, or GAS. The GAS has three stages, the first being the alarm stage, as you see here, which is the stimulus that sparks a reaction, growth, or performance, with the arrow pointing up. Then, as the alarm stressor increases, we reach resistance and kind of flatline. It will cause a halt in performance or inability to respond, which, if that continues, will then cause exhaustion and eventually burnout. Alarm. That's the purpose of stress. It can be a friend. It's an alarm clock built in to let you know it's time to do the work. This initial alarm stage or challenge stage can be a good thing. It's where you receive the stimulus from the sympathetic nervous system to get you going. Too much of it, and you are eventually met with resistance, the buildup of the weight you are carrying. Eventually, the stress becomes too heavy. You can keep pushing through, as many of us in ministry like to say that we do. We just keep pushing. But in the end, you will only be met with pure exhaustion. This here is, in fact, a picture of someone downstairs in the study room. I believe it's an MDiv student pastor. Pure exhaustion is the end result of too much stress. Now that we have defined stress and the stages of stress, let's look at what the stresses of ministry does to the body. Accurate, I believe. That's how I feel the past few years at seminary. Stress ages us, okay? But ministry should not be harmful to one's health, okay? I repeat, ministry should not be harmful to one's health. But according to a United Methodist report, for about half of all ordained United Methodist clergy, it is harmful. According to a survey conducted by the United Methodist Board of Pension and Health Benefits, 50% of United Methodist clergy said their jobs stressed them out. So why are they stressed? Let's look at the external demands of ministry placed on them by others. To start with, in the United Methodist Church, we have the system of itinerancy, or the moving pastors from church to church every few years. So that is a built-in stressor. The change alone brings out the stresses of having to move, start over, find a new support network, and is compounded if a spouse has to find a new job and children a new school. Then there's the pressure to overwork. High expectations by the congregants are placed on the pastor to be able to do it all. Because of this, many pastors do not take the necessary vacation time, let alone take a Sabbath and time to disengage. Then, unfortunately, in some situations, it is frankly an unhealthy or conflictual church. All of these sound like excellent reasons to be in ministry, right? I'll never forget the first time I met with my district superintendent some 3 years ago. And after learning that I'd already started seminary and I was called to ministry, he just listened, and the first question he asked me was if I was crazy. Are you crazy for wanting to do this? And the answer may be yes. Maybe us clergy are. But like I said, that does not mean that ministry should be harmful to one's health. And just what are those ways that external demands affect us internally? Let's take a look. Not a good scenario. Here we are looking at internal demands placed on ourselves, as well as the internal physical effects of stress that affect our health. Clergy members are most likely and hopefully in ministry because they felt a calling on their life. This calling and sense of duty to fulfill God's will for our lives can also lead us to the point where we think we need to make extreme personal sacrifices. An attitude of dying on the cross with Christ, if you will. And at the very least, clergy often suffer from compassion fatigue. So the very qualities that may make them good, caring pastors can also end up damaging their personal lives and relationships. This stress then causes various health problems in clergy. 5% suffer from depression compared to 3% of the general population, while 26% report difficulty from depressive symptoms compared to just 12% of the general population. In survey work done by the Clergy Health Initiative, one of our very own faculty members, Ed Moore, during his time at Duke, they found that 40% of United Methodist clergy are obese, 40%, compared to just 29% of the population of North Carolina, which is already the 13th most obese state. The most obese state is Mississippi at 35%. This means that United Methodist clergy as a whole are more likely to be obese than the most obese state in America. Stress, depression, obesity. When will we learn that we need to take care of ourselves and know our human limits? Our answer is in the incarnation of Jesus Christ. We must look at this theologically. John 1:14 is where we root this theology. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. This is the classic expression of the Christian doctrine of the incarnation or enfleshment. The Son, who is himself God, is the visible manifestation of the invisible God, and yet in this flesh form took on human characteristics. Jesus was born. He grew. He grew tired. He got thirsty. became hungry, physically weak, felt sorrow, wept, and died. Jesus experienced what we experience. Why then do we place so much pressure and stress on ourselves, on our own ministry, when even Jesus placed boundaries on his daily life? Here we have the image of Jesus sleeping on a boat during a storm. It comes from Matthew 8. And when he got into the boat, his disciples followed him. A windstorm arose on the sea so great that the boat was being swamped by the waves, but he was asleep. And they went and woke him up, saying, "Lord, save us, we are perishing." And he said to them, "Why are you afraid, you of little faith?" And it goes on, and there are many lessons within this particular passage, but particularly we are looking at the fact Jesus is asleep on a boat in the middle of a storm. And we can have many storms in our lives. They come in many forms. Some go more quickly than others. But too often when we are faced with all of these internal and external demands of ministry placed on us by others and by ourselves, we fail to realize that we too must rest as Jesus rested. We too must take time for rejuvenation and Sabbath. Jesus often withdrew to lonely places to pray, Luke 5:16. Here, Jesus had just healed a man with leprosy, and the word of his ministry was rapidly spreading. Crowds would gather to hear him and be cured of their diseases. So at the height of his busyness of Jesus' ministry, when he was teaching and preaching and healing and being in ministry with the people and doing the things that Jesus did, he needed to withdraw, reflect, and to rest. Friends, being a rock star pastor does not mean you are superhuman. So, what to do about this? How can we take what we've learned and know and what we know about stress to make changes and for these changes to be sustainable? To begin with, we must set boundaries. Establishing boundaries in our personal lives and in our ministry is of vital importance. Every relationship must have boundaries, whether that is personal or within the larger context as a church pastor. As you see here, we can think of our boundaries as a box, and the things that keep us healthy and grounded are those things within the box. But when that box becomes stretched, or we poke holes in the box, or when we are completely outside of the box, and we disregard our boundaries, then we experience stress, fear, guilt, and anxiety. The Reverend Eric Parker of MillennialPastor.com says that essentially pastors are bad at self-care because we lack selfishness. We try to be on call for everyone, and we lack boundaries to our personal lives. Linda Wolf Jones of the Holston United Methodist Conference put together a clergy self-care report in which she clearly defines boundaries as being essential to the health of ministers. She says, "Establishing boundaries for our personal lives facilitates our ability to maintain the balance that we need in order to continue to function well, both as clergy and in each part of our lives. We can establish boundaries to set limits and minimize encroachments on our time, space, and personal lives." One way of establishing boundaries is to create a healthy partnership with your church committees. Specifically in the United Methodist Church, this is called a pastor-parish relations committee, or the PPR. By working together with the PPR, you can both establish guidelines and boundaries. Your PPR should be there to guide, support, and to care for your well-being. Your PPR would also be wise to ensure that you take a Sabbath as well as your allotted vacation times. They can help you do this by finding and ensuring there are people to fill the pulpit or provide temporary pastoral care. As in many cases, the pastor often has to find their own replacement, which further prevents them from taking necessary vacation time. Once again, I mention Ed Moore, who put together this very pastor and parish curriculum training in partnership with Duke University. It includes a facilitator workbook, workbook for the PPR, and a DVD. This is a resource that we could all be applying in our own church setting. Ongoing ways that I will continue the work of my capstone is also by writing articles for The Advocate. I've been asked after graduation if I would be willing to write a health or stress-based article, and here are some of the options in which I may be putting together some articles for that. Establishing boundaries, as we talked about, personal and work expectations, stress in the body, and then stimulus versus stress. And finally, I will be offering this training, an ongoing training for the district level. The many pastor trainings we have throughout the year, as well as potentially on the conference level as I continue more research and refine my findings. To end, I leave you with a quote by the great philosopher Ferris Bueller. Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it. May your ministry be blessed, and may it not be harmful to your health.